I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels' family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Dublina Chakraborty.
And I'm Sarah Dowdy.
And in 2009, a couple of antique dealers from Mexico, Carlos and Leticia Noyola, stirred up a big controversy in the art world. They'd for some time had in their possession a huge, previously unknown trove of material that belonged to renowned 20th century artist Frida Kahlo, now who's probably, of course, considered one of the most famous painters ever.
Certainly one of the most iconic painters.
Absolutely. And this trove that they have includes paintings, letters, diaries, complete with sexually explicit doodles, recipes, and other keepsakes. So this trove sounds pretty interesting, but the way they came by it is admittedly a little bit sketchy. The couple say that they bought it from a lawyer who got it from a wood carver who worked for Diego Rivera, Kahlo's husband. And they have a letter to the wood carver from Kahlo offering the stash to him as payment for some work that he'd done. And this is kind of one of the proofs that they have of it. Initially, nobody really paid much attention to the fact that they had this, but just when Princeton Architectural Press was about to publish a book featuring the finds called Finding Frida Kahlo, Frida experts from all over stepped forward to protest.
Yeah, according to a 2010 article in Newsweek by Jenny Yabroff, 12 Kahlo experts signed this official letter denouncing the new collection, and the trust that controls Kahlo's copyright even filed a criminal complaint asking the Mexican government to investigate the finds and to ultimately try to block the book's publication. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about how this situation has turned out in the second part of this two-part podcast. But for now, we want to consider, why are so many people convinced that the material is fake in the first place, especially since scientific testing has dated it to Kahlo's lifetime, and a handwriting expert says that the writing in the letters does match Kahlo's.
So Yabroff's article goes a little bit into the process of art authentication, which is really interesting, and she discusses how experts will often base their opinions regarding a work's authenticity on whether it feels like something the artist would do, or in the case of letters, whether it just sounds like something he or she would say. So that sounds pretty inexact, but at least in Kahlo's case, there might be something to these sort of touchy-feely verdicts, because her works are so much about her. I mean, of about 143 authenticated paintings. 55 of those are self-portraits.
So, of course, all of this attention is also partly because Frida's work is just so highly acclaimed, and she's even developed kind of a cult following over the past couple of decades. Frida maniacs, as Stephanie Mensmer calls Kahlo fans in an article for the Washington Monthly, seem to be at least as interested in Kahlo's life story as they are in her art. You know, all the details and interesting facts about her.
In fact, Mensmer suggests that this is why diehard feminists don't really celebrate Kahlo that much, which I find to be really interesting. And it's because some of them feel that her fame isn't really related to her work. So in this episode, we want to take a look at that life story that so many people are drawn to. It's one that involves politics and even a touch of glamour and a tumultuous love story. After we did the Brownings episode, a lot of people were requesting more love. Yes, so here it is. And probably the part that touches people the most, just Frida's pain and suffering.
It's a major part of her personality. So pain was something that Frida Kahlo learned about pretty early on, even though she started out in a fairly happy situation. She was born Magdalena Carmen Frida Kahlo y Calderon on July 6, 1907, and she was the third of four daughters. So she came from a mixed ancestry, too, which must have made her stand out a little bit growing up.
Yeah, her father was Guillermo Kahlo, a German Jew who had immigrated to Mexico in 1891, and her mother was Matilda Calderon, a Mexican Catholic whose heritage was a mix of both Indian and Spanish. And according to an article by Phyllis Tuchman in the Smithsonian, Frida's father really just adored her. She was his favorite of all his daughters, and he found her to be very smart and very much like him. And she doted on him in return. And her relationship with her mother, though, was a little bit more contentious. Frida seemed to admire her mom. She thought that she was smart, but sometimes she thought that her mom could be a little too fanatically religious and also cruel. Frida herself, though, was a fairly obedient child, but she did have quite the quick temper.
So the Kahlo Calderon family lived in a house known as Casa Azul, or Blue House, which her father had built in Coyoacan, an area outside of Mexico City. And it's significant to know this because it's a place that Frida would come back to throughout her life. So she had her first real experience with adversity at only age six when she contracted polio. We've, of course, done an episode on that, so you can, you know, get a better picture of what that would have been like for her and her family by listening to that old episode. Frida, of course, survived, but after her bout with polio, her right leg was thinner than her left, and her right foot was also stunted. But she really didn't let that beat her, didn't let it stop her in any way.
No, she didn't. She, maybe to prove that her disabilities couldn't keep her down, she became a total tomboy. She played sports such as soccer, she did boxing, wrestling, swimming, and she would run around with the boys from her school instead of learning to clean and cook at home like the other girls might have been doing. She was also exposed to art pretty early on. Her father was a photographer, and he taught her some of the tricks of his trade, including how to retouch photos. And Frida also took drawing lessons from one of her father's pals when she was growing up.
So when she was 15 years old, she started at the elite National Preparatory School in Mexico City. And at that time, she was really one of only a few females studying there. And you might, of course, expect Frida Kahlo to have been studying art or something like that. But she was taking science courses like anatomy and biology because her ultimate goal was to become a doctor. And of course, the things she learned in these classes, you know, anatomy and biology, might have really informed her artwork later on and made her pieces more realistic when it came to human anatomy, that sort of thing.
She was at school when she met Diego Rivera, a man who, as we mentioned, plays a major role later on in her life story. Now, Rivera, just to give you a little bit of quick background on him, he was a Mexican-born, also Mexican-born like Frida, and about 20 years her senior. He started drawing and studying art at an early age, and by 1907, he'd moved to Europe to study the great masters like Gauguin and Matisse, but he was still searching for something new, a different style of painting that would allow him to reach a wide audience and really express his take on what was going on in the world. So he returned to Mexico, and by 1921, he was painting a series of public murals as part of a government program. And these murals reflected his thoughts about Mexico and its history and its people. And that's what he was doing when he met Frida for the first time. He was painting a mural in her school's auditorium. And apparently, Kahlo would play pranks on him while he was working, things like stealing his lunch, and she would put soap on the steps next to where he was working.
And you just think of them as this dignified adult couple.
Right.
It's hard to imagine these childish pranks of hers.
Yeah, but she was supposedly known for having this great sense of humor and for being quite the trickster. So according to Tuchman's article in Rivera's autobiography, he recalls seeing Frida for the first time when he was painting one night. He said, quote, "All of a sudden, the door flew open, and a girl who seemed to be no more than 10 or 12 was propelled inside. She had unusual dignity and self-assurance, and there was a strange fire in her eyes."
So apparently, this older, worldly muralist actually noticed Frida, even though she was only 16 at the time. But as far as we can tell, nothing really happened between them. They didn't get to know each other at this point. So Frida really seemed to be caught up in her studies and her friends, and she had a boyfriend too named Alejandro Gomez Arias. And in 1925, one of the major events of her life happens, and she's actually with her boyfriend when it happened. She was 18 years old, and they were riding home from school one day when a trolley car crashed into their bus. And in the accident, a metal handrail broke off and stabbed Frida's body, basically going into her abdomen and exiting through her vagina. When it was all said and done, her spinal column was broken in three places. Her collarbone, some ribs, and her pelvis were all broken. And then her right leg, the one that had already been affected by polio, was broken in 11 places. Her right foot was dislocated and crushed. And a lot of people died in this crash. I mean, you can imagine if her injuries were that bad. And initially, doctors thought that Frida wouldn't survive either. She had an operation. She was in the hospital for about a month. And then finally, she got to go home. But her recovery process after that was still a long, long time and quite painful, too.
Yeah, it was not at all comfortable. It lasted for months, and she had to spend the whole time encased in these plaster corsets, basically like a body cast. Obviously, she couldn't go back to school while she was in that state, so that is when she started painting. The way she described it, she started painting, quote, "without giving it any particular thought. It was just sort of something for her to do to pass the time," and she basically taught herself. I mean, she did, as we mentioned, she'd had those drawing lessons and everything, but this was kind of her foray into painting, and she did it from her sick bed. Her mom had a special easel rigged up for her and had a mirror attached to the underside of her bed's canopy, and so that's how her self-portrait started.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road trip or waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And of course, Frida hadn't been to Europe to practice art and to study the masters as Rivera had, but she must have had some knowledge of them because she would incorporate little bits of their styles into her own paintings. Again, according to Tuchman's article, she gave her boyfriend a painting of herself that showed her with a swan-like neck and tapered fingers, and she called it Your Botticelli.
It's really easy to imagine her in bed staring at this mirror all day, every day for months and trying to heal. And it's also easy to imagine that that would lead to a lot of introspection. And it seemed that during this time, Frida really started to see herself differently, or at least notice some fundamental changes about herself. She wrote in a letter, quote, "I was a child who went about in a world of colors. My friends, my companions became women slowly. I became old in instants."
And maybe it was partially a result of seeing this change in herself, but as she recovered, Frida, who had always had sort of a leftist streak, began to get more interested in Mexican politics. She struck up a friendship with Tina Bedotti, an Italian photographer who was a member of the Communist Party, and she ended up joining the Communist Party herself. According to PBS, Frida actually started telling people that her birthday was July 6th, 1910 rather than 1907. So that's why you might see some discrepancies in her birth date if you're researching her on your own. And she probably chose that year because it coincided with the outbreak of the Mexican Revolution. So you can see how ardent she was about her political beliefs and how much she kind of internalized those.
So of course, Frida's entrance into the political world also reformed some old connections. So an acquaintance from Frida's past also happened to be communist, and that was, of course, the muralist Rivera. And that was sort of what his working with murals was all about in the first place. It was a rejection of elite easel art and fancy galleries and museums and the paintings that rich people would have in their homes that weren't as accessible for everyday people. You know, you have a mural in a public building, anybody can see it. And Rivera also became a leading proponent of a post-revolutionary movement called the Mexicanidad, which rejected Western European influences seen among the aristocracy for all things considered authentically Mexican. So kind of like air quotes there. And then running in the same political circles, perhaps it was only inevitable that Rivera and Frida would, of course, cross paths again, especially if she had made such an impression on him the first go-round.
Yeah, and this meeting, or re-meeting, probably happened at a party given by Frida's friend Medotti, who we mentioned, in 1928. This time, though, when Rivera and Frida met, the two did start up a romantic relationship. By all accounts, they were truly the odd couple, at least as far as their appearances were concerned. He was 6 feet tall and 300 pounds and really kind of awkward looking, and she was 98 pounds and 5'3", so very small and also considered quite pretty. And we've already mentioned the 21-year age difference between them. So that was a big thing, too.
Even more if you go off of Frida's fake birthday.
Yeah, that's true. Her fake age would have put them further apart. But when Rivera started courting Frida, she was still living at her parents' house, Casa Azul, and so he'd stop by under the ruse of critiquing her paintings. After all, he was by this time the most celebrated artist in Mexico, and she was still unknown. So it would make sense that she would want his opinion and tips maybe on her art. Their friends and family were skeptical of their relationship, but it wouldn't take long before Frida would roll pretty much head on into what she described as the second accident of her life, which was her marriage to Rivera. So that is it for this part of the podcast on Frida Kahlo. But next time we're going to give you a little bit more on this accident number two that we just mentioned, Diego and Frida's travels into America, their tumultuous love, and of course, Frida's art. We're going to talk a little bit more about those portraits we've been mentioning, those eyebrows. I'm sure you all want to get
Gotta talk about the eyebrows.
Yes. And we'll also talk more about the controversy of the recent Frida Kahlo finds. So with that, I think we will go ahead and move on to listener mail. Well, we haven't done too much listener mail in a while, so I think we're going to read a few emails this time to make up for it. The first one is from listener Jill, and she says, "Hello, ladies. I just made a trip to Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky. On the historic tour, visitors get to see Booth's Amphitheater, which is a large platform close to the top of the cave that looks out over a huge open part of the tunnel. The ranger recounted how the actor Edwin Booth once performed Hamlet from the platform to large crowds below. He also retold the story of how one Booth killed a Lincoln and another saved a Lincoln. Coincidentally, I listened to the Booth conspiracy episode on the way home from the trip."
Which is so cool. I love the idea of getting to see Booth at Mammoth Cave performing his signature role of Hamlet. Imagine when he picks up the skull or something from a cave.
Yeah, I've never been there, but
I haven't either, but it sounds like a cool place to see a play, actually. So we got a lot of mail about the Booth conspiracy episode, actually. I kind of figured we would get a lot of mail because there are so many Lincoln fans out there. But I wanted to share one interesting point that a listener, Patrick, wrote in to share with us. He said, "Booth wanted to kill General Grant, as you may know, but as everyone knows, he did not attend the play, or Booth did not come up with a plan for the event. The interesting reason why the Grants did not attend is that Julia Dent wanted to see her children and leave Washington as soon as possible that afternoon. And that's what Grant told Lincoln. But more interestingly, many believe Julia did not care for Mary Todd Lincoln and did not want to attend the play with her." I kind of had wondered about that. They went through a few theater guest invitations before they finally settled on their poor engaged couple. And it seems like, you know, people would be hopping to go to a play with Lincoln.
I would jump at the chance to go to a play with the president.
And his wife, yeah. I mean, it sounds like it would be an opportunity of a lifetime, although clearly things didn't go as planned.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels has a stay for any traveler you want to be, with 22 brands and over 7,400 locations. Whether you're a business traveler, a family road tripper, someone who wants to seek out history and maybe make your own, or just planning a quick getaway, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Like a Cambria Hotel, where you can be a cocktail connoisseur and sip locally inspired craft beverages at downtown locations in the center of it all. This is a fun way to visit cities with a lot of history and a lot of fun in mind. Or a Radisson Hotel, for all our productivity powerhouses out there. With flexible workspaces and on-site restaurants, you'll get the most out of your work trip. You'll get the coffee, the Wi-Fi, and the work done. And we can't forget about comfort hotels. Imagine you're a family road tripper, waking up in your big spacious room and then heading down to a free hot breakfast for the entire family, including waffles. So you'll be well-fed and ready for the day's adventure, even if that's just relaxing. After that, you're spending all afternoon relaxing by the pool. You deserve it. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you. Book directly at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now we're going to switch gears just a little bit and get in our Wayback Machine, because we have a listener mail here, a very recent one from last week, but it is about an episode that we did a year ago on Paul Morphy, the chess champion, and it's from Sarah in New Orleans, and she says, I'm a longtime listener, first-time writer-inner, and a local TV producer here in New Orleans. When y'all did your Paul Morphy podcast back in June, I was completely surprised and delighted to hear that arguably the greatest chess player in the whole world hailed from right here in New Orleans. Anyway, y'all inspired me to do a short package for our 5 p.m. news about Paul Morphy. I figured that a lot of New Orleanians like myself had no idea who he was, and I wanted to spread the word. In doing the research, I discovered lots of cool things about Paul Morphy and things that maybe y'all didn't get to mention. The way I see it, he was kind of the Forrest Gump of the 19th century New Orleans, being that he managed to cross paths with more than a few major historical people and icons. For example, he was born in the house that P.G.T. Beauregard, a major general of the Civil War Confederacy, later lived in. At 9, he defeated Winfield Scott at chess 3 times in a row, and later he lived in and died in the house that is now Brennan's Restaurant, arguably the most famous and iconic restaurant in New Orleans, and she sent us a link. Maybe we'll post it on Facebook or something so you guys can check out her package that she put together. It's 2 minutes long. And thanks for writing in, Sarah. It's really cool to know that our telling this story inspired other people to tell this story.
Yeah, I liked her segment too. It featured a chess teacher in New Orleans and a couple of boys who are learning the art of chess, just like Paul Morphy would have many, many years ago.
So, and she said she might learn to play chess from that chess teacher that she interviewed,
you know,
which I think is really cool.
You know, I had that same aspiration after we did the Paul Morphy episode, but it didn't quite play out.
Yeah,
no pun
playing
intended.
Chess for me is like knitting. It's one of those things that I learned to do. I've learned to do multiple times over the course of my lifetime,
and
I continue to drop
it.
Yes, exactly. It's a phase that I get into for a couple of weeks, and then I fall out of it. So maybe I'll take it up again.
Yeah, someday. So thank you all for writing in, sharing so much stuff about the Lincoln assassination. And yeah, you can always email us about really old episodes, too. We like to hear things like you've produced a news segment based on a podcast. That's pretty cool. So we are at historypodcast@discovery.com. We're also on Twitter at Missed in History, and we are on Facebook.
And if you get inspired in the meantime, before part 2 of the Frida Kahlo episode comes along, to learn a little bit more about famous artists, we have a whole slew of articles about famous artists on our website. I mean, Picasso, Jackson Pollock, Dali, even Frida. And you can look them up by visiting our homepage at www.howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge the season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. the joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said, my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star starting May 15th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.